This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
I won't try to pretend that I understand what a dog or cat feels when it goes to the veterinarian or groomer. For some pets, visions of space aliens conducting medical experiments and waterboarding might be close. As pet caregivers, we try to coo our furry charges into believing that it's for their own good and to be brave. But if you've ever broken out in a sweat at the mere thought of going to the dentist for a root canal, you know that all the cajoling in the world just doesn't cut it. Debbie Martin, a licensed veterinary technician, is today's guest. She is one of only 14 veterinary technicians to earn her specialty status in behavior. We'll discuss how can you ensure that your pet will receive the best care by learning how to recognize and reduce fear, stress, and anxiety. We'll be right back after the short break.
Tired of wasting money on giant bags, boxes, and jugs of litter that don't last? Switch to World's Best Cat Litter, the only litter that lets you use less and get more. World's Best Cat Litter uses the concentrated power of corn to deliver outstanding odor control and easy cleanup. It's lightweight, 99% dust-free, and pet, people, and planet-friendly. It's even flushable. Make the switch to World's Best Cat Litter and save $2. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Debbie, this is wonderful. I really appreciate you being on this interview today because there's so much that people don't understand of how their pets are trying to talk to us.
I agree. And even being in the veterinary field and being in the behavior field, I'm still learning things. We're all still learning things, and every pet's an individual. So how they perceive the veterinary hospital is going to vary based on that individual's experience.
Now, your background is really very interesting because, as I mentioned, there's only 13 other veterinary technicians who've achieved your status. And I think a lot of people don't realize that veterinary technicians can now become specialized. So there's veterinary assistants and there's veterinary technicians. So tell us a little bit about how you as a veterinary technician became so interested in behavior.
Well, certainly behavior is a newer specialty for technicians. When we think of technicians, I think it's easier for most people to just consider us nurses. It's not a term that we're actually using at this point, but we are working towards changing that. So it's a more recognizable term for the general public. We are basically nurses to the veterinarians. And it does require a formal education. And then with behavior and specializing in that, that can take years of additional education and continuing education as well. So it's pretty advanced. Now, when I first started in veterinary technology, my previous background had been as a preschool teacher, believe it or not. So I was actually
children
very interested.
Children and pets, very similar, yes.
Yes, they are very similar. I say they all can bite, right?
yes.
So when I went into the veterinary field, I think I was just more drawn to development and how they related to each other and how we could affect change in them and change their actual development and how they saw the world, just as we can with children in those developmental stages that they go through when they're young, as well as they're developing, are pretty critical, those experiences that they're having, because they form long-lasting memories just as people do.
So having them learn this conditioning is so important. And if all of a sudden somebody has adopted a pet, it's a rescue, it's in the rescue cat or a dog, just because it's older doesn't mean that you still can't try to improve the way that they're recognizing the world, dealing with a veterinarian, dealing with a groomer. Isn't that true?
That's true. Certainly old dogs and cats can learn new tricks. They can make new associations. it's always easier if we develop good associations and teach them the things we want them to learn early on, being proactive rather than reactive once we discover we have a problem and maybe they become frightened of getting their nails trimmed or going to the veterinary hospital. Changing their mind about it is going to take a little bit more time than if we had proactively tried to create really positive experiences from the start.
I know when I was in veterinary school in my early practice life that, you know, sometimes you'd have an animal that came in, it was just being, as we would say, naughty, and it wasn't behaving. And, you know, you'd get this group of people that would just basically sit on the dog or the cat and go, you are going to let us do what we need to do. And that is just so wrong in what we're doing, because you could see these same pets coming back time after time, becoming more and more afraid. Before I get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about, I said, how we, in the beginning, how we would be able to decrease this fear and stress and anxiety. What does a fearful dog look like? Because we, or dog or cat, we think, okay, fear is going to be hiding in the corner. It's going to be maybe peeing or pooping on itself. And it just, that's what a fearful dog looks like. But there's other things that we can look for too, aren't there?
There are. There can be very subtle signs of fear, anxiety, and stress in our pets. And when we're talking about fear, anxiety, and stress, the reason we say all those words together is really because it's hard to differentiate between the three. Is it fearful? Is it anxious? Or is it stressed? They're very similar, so you'll hear me lump that together quite often. It's pretty common in the fear-free modules and fear-free initiative within the veterinary community to kind of talk about fear, anxiety, and stress all together. But those signs can be very subtle, and it's really knowing the individual animal and what their typical response is and what they look like when they're happy. We can, if you think about your own pet, tell me perhaps what your dog or cat looks like when they're happy and relaxed, right? You know, so if you think about what that looks like, and then we can extrapolate from other situations and look at their body language and other contexts and know, are they feeling comfortable and relaxed, or are they perhaps a little nervous? So some of those subtle signs can be things like licking their lips and turning their head away, avoiding eye contact. Maybe their ears are normally perked forward when they're happy or relaxed, and they start to go to the side or lean back. And their tail, depending on their tail carriage, in dogs, if it's kind of neutral and just off their back, if it starts to tuck between their legs, that can be mean they're more nervous. With cats, a friendly tail up in the air is usually, you know, if you think about your cat when they greet you when you come home, they might come scattering across the room, their tail's up and they're purring and rubbing against you. So that happy, expectant look of seeing you return home versus perhaps when they're a little bit nervous, it's going to be held close to them. It might be tucked between their legs. If they're a little bit agitated, a cat might thrash its tail, or just the tip of the tail might be moving almost like they're tapping their foot.
Yes.
Yes, it certainly is. It's tapping, right? Like, I'm not quite sure about this. And we also think about when we look at their facial expressions, you can see a worried look because the muscles change. The brow between the eyes will actually look like it's frowning. And when there's tension there and they're holding their mouth tightly shut, or a dog who is panting when it's not hot outside and the room is nice and comfortable is probably handling the stress, but they're feeling a little bit of stress in that context.
So those are all signs, and we know that life sometimes can be stressful for us or our pets, and we can't totally make that stress go away. But you had mentioned something about a fear-free initiative, and I think that's something a lot of people and veterinarians have never heard about. What is the fear-free initiative?
The fear-free initiative is a veterinary initiative that has been developed by Dr. Marty Becker. Dr. Marty Becker is a veterinarian. He's also known as American Veterinarian. He used to be on the Today Show. He's written over 26 books and is big in the veterinary community. He brings people together. He brings specialists together, and he saw the need for developing protocols within the veterinary hospital that helped alleviate the fear, anxiety, and stress that pets are showing when they come in for treatments, even preventive care. And from that, he developed this fear-free initiative, which is the start of creating an environment within the veterinary hospital that is conducive to decreasing fear, anxiety, and stress associated with veterinary care.
Now, I had the opportunity to go to a seminar, and I'm now taking the courses to become a certified fear-free veterinarian. But I know there's things that it's really going to be teamwork. No matter what we do for our pets, it's teamwork of what a veterinarian does in the practice and what that pet owner does at home and on the way to the veterinarian and while they're there. I know so many times, and they have the best of intentions, a pet owner will be there and the dog is a little nervous and the owner, I think, is going to rub all their fur off because they keep saying, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And it's like, really, take a breath yourself, because the pet is able to pick up from us that something's not right here. If mom or dad's upset and a little concerned, maybe there's a reason for me to be upset. So this fear-free initiative, does it have a component for the pet owner?
It certainly does. And you're right. It is about a team approach, because the veterinary visit starts when the pet's at home. The owner's getting prepared to leave and getting the things out to take to the veterinary hospital. Cats and dogs are very observant of our behavior, and they recognize when the cat carrier comes out that shortly after, you know, based on previous learning history, most likely the cat's going to be put into the carrier and going to go for a car ride, and there's only probably a handful of places the cat ever goes. And so if the veterinary experience has been stressful for the cat, then certainly that carrier coming out is going to be something that is predictive of developing fear and anxiety. You're going to see the emotional change in the cat. We often would get calls that, you know, Mrs. Smith has to reschedule Fluffy appointment because the carrier came out and now he's hiding under the bed and she can't get him out. We've got to reschedule. So certainly cats make and dogs make associations, and pet owners have to play a big role in bringing a pet to the hospital that is calm and relaxed and able to learn to enjoy the veterinary hospital. So a lot of the fear-free initiative is about teaching the veterinarians and the technicians and the veterinary professionals about how to create a calming environment, how to interact appropriately so we're not exacerbating fear, anxiety, and stress in the pets that we're working with. But it's also about educating the pet owner on things that they can do at home to make their pet enjoy the visit more.
Okay, Debbie, let's break this down. Let's do cats first. So you're right. Okay. I have two cats, and I don't even bring the carrier into the house. It's in the garage. I've gotten it out of the rafters. I'm trying to close the doors. I'm trying to be calm. And all of a sudden, the cats are just looking at me like, no, I know you're up to something. And they somehow communicate it with each other, and they're under something. And I'm now chasing them through the house. And I feel so badly, because here I am, the veterinarian. I'm just trying to take you to the office for your teeth cleaning or whatever I need to do. And it's like, I am doing something wrong and I know it. So what am I doing wrong besides too much?
But first, with cats, the carrier usually has become somewhat poisoned in their mind, as it has become associated with something frightening. So getting them used to and comfortable to the carrier, you might need to go get a completely new carrier that looks different to your cats and have it out in the environment and make it something that is enriching for them. So it's got a nice comfortable bed in there. It's accessible at all times. Every once in a while, the crate fairy appears and hides treats or catnips or special toys in the carrier, so the cat wants to explore it on its own. And hopefully your cats will start to see the carriers as a nice, comfortable, safe place. Cats generally, they like to find hiding places. They like to find comfortable nooks to curl up in and watch things and watch the household and movement throughout the house, watch what we're doing. So we can provide them a carrier that is comfortable and safe, and we can even add calming pheromones to the carrier to make it even more attractive for the cat. They make pheromones for cats so pheromones are actually a scent, not actually a scent, it's a chemical substance. I usually tell people that it's something that they smell, but it's really not. It's something that is perceived by the cat, and it communicates through the emotional center of the brain and has a calming effect on the cat. Pheromones are released from the cheek glands in cats as well as from the mammary tissue of cats. Some of the calming ones are. And so there are some synthetic versions available out there that we can use to make the carrier even more attractive.
That sounds wonderful. So you somehow have this carrier out at all times. And it might look a little bit strange initially to get, you know, the thought of having your cat carrier out. But I know there's some carriers that are wonderful because you can just leave them out as a kitty bed. But then it has a top that zips on. So your cat is now in its carrier, but going, wait, my bed is moving, but all right, it's my bed. I like this place. And then you put it in the car. And most people want to put their kitty carrier or their dog carrier in the front seat. But it doesn't seem to be the safest place. Where is the best place to put the carrier or your pet?
Well, for the safety of your pet, probably the safest place for a carrier is actually behind the passenger seat on the floorboards. That's probably the safest place in the car that it can be. Other things we want to consider within the car, though, is the temperature. So a cat that's used to being in the house, that maybe it's 70 degrees in your home, if there's an extreme temperature change when they go out to the car, that can be unsettling for them and create stress. So if it's hot out, let's cool the car down before the cat goes into the car. And if it's cold out, let's warm it up a little bit so that they're comfortable. Other things we can do in the car to make the car ride better is we think about what kind of music or sound that cat's hearing there. There is specially made music for cats. Through a cat's ear is just one example, but there are multiple ones out there. And it's played at a slower tempo, as well as the frequency has been adjusted to be more appealing to cats. There was another recent study, too, that showed that reggae music may have a calming effect. I believe that may have just been on dogs, not on cats.
Well, that might be kind of fun. So whatever music you want to have, even though you might want to be tempted to turn that radio volume way up to drown out the caterwauling of the kitty, that's not going to be in the best interest of that cat. So we have it in the carrier, but there are some cats that are just, they haven't had a good experience with this. People say, I just don't even want to take my cat into the vet. You know, it looks fine with me. I'm just going to leave it home. But in reality, we know that those cats do need to have, even if they look healthy, they're totally indoors, a wellness exam at least once a year. And if the cat is that stressed out, there are safe, effective medications that can be given to cats at home that can help to bring down that fear, anxiety, and stress. We've been talking right now with Debbie Martin. She is a licensed veterinary technician. We're talking about fear, stress, and anxiety in our cats and dogs, what we can do to bring it down. We're going to be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
When I adopted her, she was a mess. Scabs, itching, licking, missing fur, hot spots, a thin, dull coat. So I take the dog to the vet for the standard run-of-the-mill tests and treatments. No results. I hear your advertisement on the radio.
DINOVITE .com.
859-428-1000.
So I get the 5-pound box of Dynavite and the Lico chops within a 4-week total. Instead of a German Shedder, I have a German Shepherd. Sheba is 105 lean pounds of shiny, smooth, happy dog for life because she gets fed Dynavite. And the results, they're just incredibly outstanding. And she loves it. When you rescue a dog, you have to do the right thing. You've got to feed him right for life. Do the Dynavite. Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE .com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Debbie, that was great information on cats. Now there's dogs. Dogs seem to love to get in the car, and most of them going for rides, etc. But all of a sudden, I know clients have told me they come around the corner to get to my hospital, and as soon as they make the corner, the dog, oh no, here we are. Or they do the same thing when they're going to the groomer. What can we do to make life better for a dog?
Some of the same things that we would do with cats. We think about the type of music or sounds that they're hearing. So we can use the calming music to actually calm them down. It also relaxes the owners, by the way. a lot of the techniques that we use with them our pets will actually help the owners be calmer as well as they come to the veterinary hospital. You had mentioned earlier that oftentimes pet owners are nervous and our pets pick up on that. So certainly calming music. We want to make sure that the pet has a non-slip surface to be on so they're not sliding around in the car because that can be very unsettling. So making sure we secure them in the vehicle, whether it be with a safety belt and a carrier, those are probably the safest way for them to travel. But we also want to make sure that the surface that they're standing on, they're not sliding around. And even in our cat carriers, we want to make sure they have a non-slip surface in the carrier. Even a towel can slide as we turn and the cat is kind of going back and forth in the carrier. So making sure we have those non-slip surfaces. And then the temperature as well. Or get the car into a comfortable temperature for the dog. And you mentioned that some dogs are pretty excited when they get in the car, and then when they get to the veterinary hospital, they start to become nervous. Excitement can be stress too, though. Sometimes we will see pets that are overly excited and frantic, even in the veterinary hospital, and sometimes we mistake that for happy excitement, where it's more maybe frantic excitement. I'm nervous and anxious, and so I'm doing all these crazy type behaviors. I'm jumping all over the people, and I'm a little bit frenzied. I'm not calm and relaxed. And so, as we were discussing earlier, fear, anxiety, and stress can manifest in a variety of different ways, anywhere from being afraid and hiding to being frantic and agitated to showing aggression.
You'd mentioned keeping the dogs in the car in a harness or a carrier. And I know it looks so cute having the dog with its head sticking out the window and it's flapping in the ears or flapping in the wind or dog is on your lap. But that is so unsafe to keep them in the back seat, to keep them in a harness, to keep them secured. Because even at a slow crash, I believe there is a Center for Pet Safety that shown crash test. Is that correct?
Yes, there is. And so certainly a safety belt of some sort, and there are ones that have been tested, as well as having a carrier or crate that is secured in the car. It's going to be your safest bet, not only for you as a driver, but also for your pet. And acclimating them to that type of travel is important because it could be a little bit stressful for them to feel confined. And so you might have to pair up with some sort of positive reinforcement trainer in your area to have them help you teach your pet, even your cat, to like car travel.
You're talking about positive reinforcement, and you know, going to the groomer is one thing that oftentimes pets think, oh my goodness, they're going to chop off my toes and they're going to drown me. And this is not a lot of fun. What can you do? What type of positive reinforcement can you start at home to get a pet used to being handled and nail trimmed and all these things that we need to do on an ongoing basis?
It's really important to start early and create positive emotional response to being handled and touched. Even if we haven't started early, though, we can still change how pets feel about being touched or restrained or handled. So the big way, the way that we teach people to do this is you want to associate the touching or the restraint, the brush, the nail trimmers with things the cat or dog really loves. Each individual animal is different. My dogs, they like string cheese. And when I use string cheese, it's little small pieces. I'm not using a lot. They are all healthy in weight and very active dogs. So in moderation, we'll use string cheese. I'll also use freeze-dried chicken and a variety of other different nutritious treats for them. But pairing touching them with getting something really good right afterwards helps create this positive emotional response where I touch you here on your shoulder, which you don't mind being touched, and I give you a treat. For a person, it'd be like, okay, if I touch you here and I give you a dollar. Okay, that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, I could do that again.
When I touch, yeah, maybe you can touch my shoulder again. I'm not uncomfortable with that. And so certainly pairing touch or even equipment with the presentation of food, or for some dogs, a toy, or cats, maybe it's the rubbing behind the ears, you know, that place where they lean into you and keep asking for more. We can pair a special type of petting with touching their body parts. As opposed to, I mean, I used to teach people in the past, I would say, just, you know, touch his feet and he'll get used to it. Not always. Some people are sensitive. In a human analogy, some people like having their feet touched and other people don't. And if I just keep touching you there, doesn't mean one day you're going to be like, oh, I like it now. But if we paired it with something you really enjoyed, maybe it's Godiva chocolate for human, not for dogs or cats. you would maybe start to anticipate it as something that's tolerable.
So little by little, you're getting the pet to recognize that something that I maybe wasn't too sure about, like being touched or having my feet worked on, my ears looked at, or even taking my temperature, if I get a treat or I'm distracted, that's not so bad. What else can you use it for?
The handling and restraint. Also just being in novel environments. So we can use desensitization is kind of the process of what we talk about in the veterinary behavior field, where we gradually expose animals to increasingly higher levels of whatever the stimuli is that they're a little bit nervous about. But we always do it at a point that the animal is still enjoying the experience. They're not showing signs of fear, anxiety, or stress, such as putting their ears back or tucking their tail or trying to avoid us. They're actively participating in the conversation, so to speak, because every time I'm engaged with the animal, I consider I'm having a conversation with them. It's a give and take conversation. And during that time, we're always being aware of their body language. It's telling us that they're comfortable. We can proceed, and we continue to pair small increments of and criteria together with something they really like. So to put that into easier terms, I touch you on your shoulder, you get a treat. I touch you on your elbow, you get a treat. I touch you on your wrist, you get a treat. I touch you on your toes, you get a treat. I touch your nail, you get a treat. I bring the nail trimmers out, now I'm going to touch your shoulder again, and you'll get a treat. So we break it down into little pieces, pairing each little step along the way with something the animal likes. And the whole time we're also really aware of, are they accepting the treats? Are they enjoying the interaction? Are they choosing to stay in the environment and interact with us? Or are they nervous and anxious and moving away? If they are, we've gone too fast and we need to slow things down.
Debbie, this sounds wonderful. And being a veterinarian, and most veterinarians have fairly busy practice, it's like, this is so time intensive. Is it really possible to do it in a veterinary setting, or does this have to be done at home?
You can do a lot of this in the veterinary setting. It really depends on the individual animal. And it doesn't, in the long run, require more time. Because if we just slow down a little bit and we pause when the animal says, hey, I need to think about that for a second. Okay, I can take the food again and my body is relaxed. It requires less people to restrain the animal, so it actually takes less time, is what most people are finding in the fear-free certification program. Once they've completed it and they start implementing this in their hospital, is that the visits are taking less time, less people, and they're much more fun for everyone.
When you have a cat or a dog that is fearful and you're working on this and you're trying to find a veterinarian who and their staff who's on board for this new initiative and this thought process of how to work with pets instead of I will have my way, you will do what I tell you, what can a pet owner do to try to ensure that their pet, even if the veterinary practice isn't totally on board with this yet, what can they do to help optimize their pet having as good a visit as possible?
I think it's important for pet owners to be the advocate for their pet, to be willing to say, I've brought my pet in and I decreased the amount of food that I fed her by a little bit this morning, if that's medically appropriate to do. I've brought some of her favorite treats and I'd like to have her stay in the room while the procedures are happening with her, and I'm just going to feed her some treats while you guys do what you need to do. And so really being their advocate and being wanting to be involved in the care, and also being willing to stand up and say, you know, I feel like my pet's a little bit too stressed right now. Would it be okay if we postpone things until next week? And do you have any suggestions on how we can make her more comfortable for her next visit? Certainly, as you mentioned earlier, there are medications that can help the cat or dog be more relaxed and comfortable about coming to the veterinary hospital, especially if they already have a pre-established fear. Because if they're not taking treats or they're not wanting attention, they've already decided this is a scary place to be. Changing their mind is not going to be very successful at that point. We need to get them in a better frame of mind so that they can learn to be more relaxed and comfortable in the veterinary hospital. So really being their advocate, being willing to postpone things if necessary, and having an open discussion with your veterinarian about the not only the physical well-being of your pet, but also the emotional well-being.
I know that sometimes veterinary practices can get rather chaotic. And I find that for some dogs that are just bouncing off the wall, and yes, we need to work on that. I said, you know, why don't you just leave them in the car? You know, somebody stay, if it's not too hot, stay in the car with your pet until we're ready for you and we'll call you. Most people have cell phones now. So, you know, when you get here in the parking lot, just call us, let us know you're here. We'll get you in the room ASAP. If it's a kitty, sometimes stay in the room or give us a call saying, Fluff is here. Can you just put us straight in the room? And many times the staff will say, yes, let's walk in. We'll pop you right in a room someplace where it's calm, it's quiet. You can have music playing for them. You know, oftentimes there's ways of getting a little boom box in there. So if they still make boom boxes, so a cat or a dog will have that auditory barrier, so they're not hearing all the dogs and cats in the back who are crying out sometimes or just vocalizing. It's like, oh, that's a little scary. I don't like that. And making sure that we've had towels to put over carrier. One of the things, oh, it drives me crazy. And I know it's so much easier for people. And I have many senior citizens with their pets, and it's so much easier to pop that pet in a carrier, which I love, but it's on wheels. So as they're thunka, 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 thunking, as they're coming down the walk, it's like, oh my goodness, can you imagine if you were inside this closed box and you just kept hearing this noise? That is not going to be helping. So, you know, call the staff. We'll come out and get your pet. Lift it up. Try to keep it nice and calm and not swinging all over the place, and trying to keep the number of children who are touching it to a minimum too. What other suggestions do you have?
I think a lot of the stress that they have is, it's just that coming to the veterinary hospital is they encounter a lot of different smells, sounds, unfamiliar people, other animals that they don't know, and it's overwhelming to their senses. Certainly, cats and dogs perceive the environment quite differently than we do. Their sense of smell is amazing, and they can hear a higher variety of frequencies that we cannot hear. So some sounds that we're unable to detect, they're picking up on. And we are, as humans, very good at tuning out things, but cats and dogs aren't always as good at doing that, especially in an environment that they're not familiar with. And so a lot of things, like you mentioned, is creating an environment that maybe some white noise that muffles out some of the voices or sounds of other animals, or the jingling of their collars and tags going by while they're waiting in the exam room, having the pet owner wait out in the parking lot as opposed to waiting in the lobby for the dog or cat that is nervous about being in that environment, can be a much more relaxing environment for them, helping them to be more successful when it does come time for the veterinarian to examine them.
Debbie, if you could, we mentioned about taking the pet to the veterinarian or to the groomer. Quickly, can you talk a little bit about, okay, now I need to take it home, and you know, the kids at home haven't seen the pet for a couple of hours or a day if it's been hospitalized, etc. And it's like, they're so excited to see it, and the other pets are at home. It's like, oh, you, who are you? And oh, you smell weird. I don't like you. What can a pet owner do for a cat or a dog to get that reintroduction once it's home go more smoothly?
Is especially important with cats, because in my mind, cats actually recognize each other based on how they smell versus how they look. So one smell, if you don't smell like us, like our colony or our group, you're not the cat I thought you were. And when they come back from the veterinary hospital, oftentimes their scent has changed because they have different chemicals or they're taking medications. They've been handled by different people. And so the other cats in the house may not recognize them. So things that we can do, let the cat remain in its carrier for a little bit, put it into a separate room, and let the other cat smell the other cat through the door. You can also take a dry face cloth and wipe one cat down with it, wipe the other cat down with it, and kind of mix it back and forth. So you're mixing their scents back together to create that communal scent again. So they're more likely to recognize each other. Yeah. And dogs, especially if there's been any sedation that's happened during the day, they may not be completely themselves. Even though they're awake and they're alert before they get sent home, they may be a little disoriented and feel a little weird, so to speak. And so making sure that the other animals in the house are giving that pet space, so that they can reacclimate and come into the house again and be comfortable. So just being really aware. Sometimes this takes just a few seconds. They sniff each other, go, you kind of smell funny. And they're like, oh, but you're my buddy and we're good. But Other times it can take a little bit more time. In fact, one of our own clients that we saw, her cats had rejected one of the other cats coming home, and we needed to see him for a behavior consult. She wasn't able to have these cats back together again. And it took us a year for these cats to now be able to coexist within the same space, because the other cats were so traumatized by the smell of this strange cat coming home into their house that it set off this whole cycle of not being able to live around each other in harmony anymore. And it did take about a year of intervention work to fix that. So if we can just take a few minutes when they come home from the veterinary hospital to make sure that that is a good transition for them, that it's not scary, we can save a lot of time in the long run.
Debbie, some great ideas. If people needed more ideas, wanted to learn more about the Fear-Free Initiative, where can they go? Is there some websites?
There is. It's fearfreepets.com.
Great information. And if they want to know more about you, they can always go to our website and learn all about Debbie Martin. She is a licensed veterinary technician with a special interest and certification in pet behavior. So, Debbie, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate being on the show.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information for you on how to be the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.